You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Himalaya. My name is David O'Mill. Special guest with me today is Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, a friend of the Locked On Heat podcast. How are you doing, Ben, first and foremost?
I'm doing very well. I'm down here in your home state, so thanks for having me. It's nice to be in Florida. It's been a while, honestly, maybe since the 2014 finals, I want to say, might be the last time I was down here. So it's been a little bit, but it's obviously different circumstances because I'm confined in a hotel room at Disney World, unable to go outside basically for any reason right now because I'm doing a seven-day in-room quarantine that, if we thought the safer at home stuff was rigid, this has taken that to the next level.
Did you have any qualms about coming down to Orlando in the first place? I mean, I know it was an opportunity that was not extended to a lot of media members, but there seems to be just over a handful and you are one of them. What was the thought process behind this? Did you see this opportunity and said you had to take advantage of it?
Well, first of all, I was sitting around with nothing to do in LA, so not like I was moping, right? But I definitely was very eager to cover basketball whenever it came back. Right. As you know, like basketball is basically my whole life. It has been for 13 years. And so when the NBA shut down, I went through a real, just kind of like a withdrawal period where it's like, oh my God, what am I going to do with myself? Like, how are we even going to get through this? And so once they first started talking about the bubble, I was very curious. And I actually wrote a column describing very similar to what they've come up with right after the shutdown. It's kind of like my dream scenario that maybe they could build something like this and it would work. And of course, I'm not the first person to think of it. I mean, the same things were going on in China and everything. But, it wound up kind of my dream scenario in that sense came true because they were able to put a lot of money behind this, line up the testing, find the right campus environment for the players to live in, and everything kind of came together. It was a very tricky process to get the credential. The NBA only gave out 10 credentials for people to live in the bubble for independent media members. So if you're, if you're an ESPN, you don't count for that because you're a league partner from a television standpoint, broadcast standpoint, and same thing with Turner. So there was a very rigorous application to get one of those spots. And then it was also tricky just to get health clearance, and I think my biggest concern was from the health standpoint. I knew I was living very, very safely in Los Angeles, just staying, bunkered down tight. But I didn't want to do anything that was going to put myself at risk. So I actually talked to my primary care doctor. I talked to a cardiologist. I talked to a psychiatrist. I talked to some NBA team doctors and health officials within, different organizations, just about what they thought the risk level was. And then I talked to experts outside the NBA. Who I had been interviewing for stories about COVID and everything over the last few months, just to get their take on what they thought. Basically, everybody agreed that it sounded really good on paper and the NBA was going to take these things seriously. So that kind of put my mind at ease. But there was definitely some apprehension. I mean, flying across the country, I had a mask, I had gloves on, I had one of those face shields on. I mean, I was really trying hard to take this thing seriously. Once I got to Disney World, though, I'll say I feel pretty safe here, in part because it's so big and spread out. And so it's not like, once I'm able to go outside my room, there's not going to be real problems with social distancing because, this place is built for tens of thousands of people. And the NBA really has only brought 1,000 people here. But the other thing that really gives me peace of mind, David, would be the testing. I'm getting tested every single day. Every morning I wake up, they have a link that says, see the latest test result. You're negative today. And that just builds up a level of confidence. It's like, they're checking my symptoms. I have to tell them about my pulse. I have to tell them about my temperature. So if something does go sideways, I know they're going to be all over it. There's not going to be any delay. And I think that winds up, kind of really helping to put the mind at ease.
I think everybody kind of starts to see now from the pictures that we're getting, not just from reporters such as yourself, but other, players, other sources that they're doing everything possible to mitigate and minimize any kind of outside interaction with people who aren't going through the same rigorous testing protocols that you are. And I think that's still the biggest concern, right? Is that you still have Disney cast members or hotel employees that are still coming in and out of the alleged bubble. Does that still give you any kind of concerns, not just from a personal standpoint, but to how it could potentially impact players in the future?
Well, I'll say this. I'm more concerned on behalf of the players than I am on behalf of myself. in large part because when I'm working here, I can work in my hotel room by myself. I can eat all my meals isolated. I don't have to go to team meetings. I don't have to play a full contact sport indoors. I don't have to play defense, right? All of those things are much higher risk activities than anything I'm doing. So my primary concern here is for the players because the game itself is actually just inherently risky. Now, in terms of people being inside the bubble, all the employees are wearing gloves. All the employees are wearing masks. They're very well trained in terms of keeping social distance. Like when they drop my food off, for example, they leave it on the doorstep. Right. And then they back away from the door. So there's never a situation where like I'm, you know, within 6 feet of them. So that's, very thoughtful. And they've taken a bunch of other measures too. I mean, the scary part here is that you can take all these steps to reduce spread. And if one person winds up either violating the rules by trying to go get Postmates or leaving campus and coming back, or if, one person, whether it's a hotel employee or whatever, is sick, I mean, that's all it takes to really set a chain reaction off. So, it's so far so good. There's nobody in the bubble that we know who has tested positive that has had contact with teammates or opponents. So that's a great sign. It's a great start. But look, we've got to make it through 94 nights is the length of my hotel stay here. That's a long time. A lot of things can go wrong in between now and then. So there's certainly still an anxiety factor for me, but also just for everybody else around too.
And for any of my listeners that aren't aware, make sure that you're following Ben on Twitter, and also make sure you check out the Washington Post homepage where you can see Ben on video as he's filming a lot of these details that he's talking about here. It's been very fascinating from an external, just an interest standpoint. I'm having a hard time understanding that you, somebody that I consider a friend and an associate, is in this bubble where you're a health risk. But at the same time, it's like, it's still fascinating just from a cultural perspective. I hope you don't mind feeling like a sort of like you're on display here, but it is very interesting to see the kind of steps and how you're going through this. I mean, you've been open about it as you're pacing back and forth in your room to try and keep some kind of level of cardiovascular conditioning, your food and everything else, how you've been hoarding snacks. It's been really, really interesting. So your plan then is to continue being there for the length of the rest of the NBA season, all the way through the NBA finals?
No, I mean, you hit it on the head. I feel kind of like a lab rat or like a test tube. I'm the experimental animal. And, ultimately you can lean into that or you can lean away from that. I don't see any way around it. I think people do need to know. Part of being a reporter is showing kind of the facts on the ground, right? Right. And, some of the players are coming out and maybe they're complaining about the hotel room or complaining about the food. I'm not used to like a millionaire lifestyle, right? I think a lot of people can relate to me more just like as the everyman. It's like, somehow I just got drafted for this and here's what this experience is like. And it's been amazing how many people have been following along with some of the videos I've posted. It's just something as simple as a tour of my hotel room. I mean, there's a real curiosity factor that's building around this. And it's not just basketball fans, by the way. It's people around the globe who are just trying to see how a major organization is trying to conduct its business, which is what the NBA is really doing, during this COVID era. There's a lot of lessons that can be taken for businesses in any industries, in terms of how the NBA is trying to keep people safe and how they're dealing with these challenges that are universal. So, that's been part of it for sure. In terms of, kind of like next steps or what I'm thinking about, it will be very nice to be able to leave this room and get back to something a little bit closer to normal daily life and like, our work environment. As you know, we're accustomed to a lot of routines in the NBA, whether it's like shoot arounds or pregame availabilities, postgame availabilities. And like things are going to be so weird here that the players after games, if they're not one of like two or three people who have to do interviews, they're going to leave the arena on a bus and go straight back to their hotel so they can shower. I mean, they're not even going to be showering at the gyms, right? So you can understand that like even the most basic routines that everybody's built up, whether it's players or media members, are kind of totally disrupted here. And I think that that's also part of the curiosity for basketball fans specifically, because it's like, how is everyone going to adjust? Who's going to be able to acclimate? It's obviously a severe mental test. Do teams with good chemistry survive it better than teams with bad chemistry? Can everybody stay safe long enough so that they crown a champion who everybody actually believes is valid? I mean, these are kind of really interesting societal questions, but also basketball questions too. It's just kind of all coming together simultaneously.
Absolutely. I mean, this is interesting, and we'll definitely continue getting into this with Ben Gulliver of the Washington Post in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat.
Thank you.
reminder to listen, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. I'm here with Ben Gulliver of the Washington Post going over some of the details, and I'm glad that you brought up a lot of those things that you're talking about, because I feel like I've been banging this drum maybe a little longer than most, as we were so concerned about whether or not the NBA restart would happen. And then as we're starting to see the details become much more concrete and everything, then you start to kind of take into consideration, or at least I have, the emotional toll this is going to take on players. And I feel like we're not taking that into consideration nearly enough, because it is going to be very, very difficult for players just to continue focusing on basketball. The assumption is that they'll just kind of buy into it. They'll play their games and they'll just, you know, be able to have some enough downtime where they can kind of restart and refocus. But it's going to be really difficult to be away from family members, from the normalcy of everyday life. Even, you know, we take for granted, they go on 2 week long road trips, and that's an arduous grind for them in and of itself. Being separated from family members, loved ones for a month, 2 months, 3 months at a time is going to be really, really, really difficult. And I feel like it's going to impact, possibly anyway, the overall level of play and just them on a very human level.
Oh, there's no question. You can't take away what's going off for these players off the court compared to how they're going to be able to play on the court. Speaking for myself, I mean, I usually travel about 3 to 4 months a year for my job at various points, kind of off and on. So it's not the total amount of time. It's just the fact that it's all together, right? And I actually think you can spin that positively and say, well, at least I don't have to go on 4 flights a week, because ultimately that's like the most tiring part, you know, is changing time zones and having your sleep patterns screwed up and, you know, lugging luggage through airports and all that stuff. So it is nice to know you're going to be in one spot. I'll say that. But you do feel very isolated from the outside world. You're surrounded only by your teammates. You don't even have your friends to kind of lament to if you have a bad game. It's going to be a real test for these players. And, you know, I think the people who I kind of feel the most sorry for, honestly, are players on teams that aren't championship contenders, because ultimately that's your goal if you're a contending team, is like, you know what you're focused on and you can kind of always have that like pot at the end of the rainbow. If you're a sub 500 team who was just sort of invited here because they're trying to, like, you know, increase the number of television games that they have to kind of get some of their revenue back, it's really hard to stay focused because you're like, well, does it really matter if I'm here or not? You know, some of my teammates didn't even come down. You know, maybe they tested positive, or maybe they just had personal issues. They didn't want to play. You know, I'm thinking of teams like the Brooklyn Nets or the Washington Wizards, where like they just, you know, basically half here. That's a really hard mental challenge to keep yourself invested in trying to get something positive out of this process. I do think that the basketball is going to be ugly to start. I think it's going to be choppy. I think defense is going to have an advantage just because, you know, teams have been off for so long. But I think that if we can get to like the second round of the playoffs and we're down to the top 8 teams, at that point, if you're one of those 8 teams, you're going to be thinking, look, we've already been in Disney World for 2 months. We might as well just try to win this thing. Like, let's just go ahead and try to keep this thing going and see what we can do. And I think at that point, I'm actually hopeful we're going to get some really competitive, high-quality basketball. And David, you were asking, you know, did you have any second thoughts about whether you wanted to go or not? I'll tell you, one of the major factors for me for wanting to go is this idea that if we do get to a scenario where this high-level competitive basketball, I'm going to be sitting in a gym 10 feet away from these guys playing and trash talking and, you know, basically having almost like the equivalent of a 5-on-5 pickup game right in front of me in a completely empty gym. I mean, that's every basketball fan's dream scenario, right? It's like you couldn't even imagine it being like that. It's like even better than the summer league experience, which I know you love too. So from that standpoint, you know, if there was ever any kind of doubt in my mind, it's like, yeah, I want to be, if LeBron and Zion are in this gym and I can be 10 feet away from that, I want to be there.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I admit I do have some pangs of jealousy at the prospect of watching high-level basketball that closely, that intimately. And I think that's the right word for it, is that you're in the action. You're part of it, and you're overhearing these conversations. That is absolutely fascinating. I don't know if it outweighs, at least for me, the overall issues with the time. Not that I was given the opportunity anyway. As you said, I am not one of the lucky 10 people to have been given a credential to get there. But it is very interesting, and I'm glad for you getting the opportunity, because I can't think of anybody better equipped to cover basketball and to provide the kind of insight that we're looking for. So I kind of wanted to take a step back before talking about actual on-court play and kind of give my listeners a little bit as to the details that you were kind of telling me off air about what happened to your journey. We're recording this on a Friday, so you are still in quarantine. This might not post until a couple of days later when you're finally out of quarantine. But from you were telling me you arrived in Orlando on Sunday the week before. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I flew out here on Saturday. Basically had to spend one night at a hotel outside of Disney and then check into the bubble on Sunday.
What hotel bubble, on campus is it?
It is, it's called the Casitas. It's basically the Coronado Resort. I don't know if you know those.
Yeah, but I'm one of the few people who actually covered basketball there with the junior NBA tournament that's taken place there over the last couple of years. So I know how immense this whole property is. It's huge. I mean, you can get lost in your car very easily from one place to another.
Well, we did actually, because I had a car brought me here. And I had no idea really where I was going. I've only been here once when I was a child. I remembered nothing about it. And so even though we had security kind of directing us left, right, the other thing, we still were getting lost and kind of going in circles. And the eerie part is that all these gigantic parking lots, which are normally, I'm sure, full during tourist season, July, are all completely empty when I arrived, right? Because Disney was just in the process of reopening. So the whole thing kind of feels spooky. It's almost like you're like entering like a ghost town of sorts. So that part was weird too. But, I checked in on Sunday. They gave me a magic band, you know, the typical like hotel key to get in. And they also gave me a green bracelet. And that green bracelet basically says, you know, you cannot go on the property. If security sees you, you're in big trouble. If they catch you, you're probably going to have to start your quarantine period over. So, I've been in this hotel room every day since Sunday. We're talking on Friday, and then every afternoon they test me for the coronavirus. So they have basically they come to my front door, I step outside my room, so they never come into my room. They take a swab from my nose, a swab from my throat, and then 15 hours later I get the results back. So it's been Groundhog Day for sure the last 5 days. There's kind of no other way around it.
How was the swabbing process? Because I remember your co-host from the Open Floor podcast describing as one of the more painful experiences of his life. I didn't find it to be that painful. How have you experienced it?
Well, apparently there's multiple swab procedures. So he got what's called the deep swab, which I guess they're really trying to touch your brain when they do that. You know, they're really getting in there. So we don't do that. We do the shallow swab where it just kind of feels like they're picking my nose with a Q-tip. And then they also stick another one back down my throat and trying to get to basically the tonsils. And they use those two together, I guess. I don't know if it's prevents against false negatives or false positives by doing kind of two samples at once. But, so far, so good. The amazing thing to me is how quick the testing process is. I mean, we're doing it literally in 30 seconds, you know. Sometimes I get so bored here in my room, I'm like, hey guys, like, you know, you don't have to rush off. We can talk here and chat for a minute, you know, but they obviously have to test a lot of other people. So, we don't stay in and talk too long, but it's a very efficient. And I should also mention that it's all private. I mean, the NBA has contracted with, a bio laboratory to do this. They're paying for all of it. It's an immense cost. I mean, just to send me down here for the post was tens of thousands of dollars, and that included the testing. Everyone who's a media member basically had to agree to pay that money, and also obviously agree to be tested too. So it's the ultimate privilege is kind of how I'm looking at it. There's so many people around the country who either can't get tests or they can't get quick results, and it's a problem here in Florida too, where people are waiting 7 days for a result. We've seen throughout the last few months, if you have to wait that long for a positive test result, you're missing out on critical days of potential care, and it winds up putting you, behind the eight ball when you're trying to battle the disease. So the fact that everybody on campus here has such regular, reliable, and thorough testing, it's like the ultimate privilege. And for that, I'm actually really thankful because, you want to be able to do your job with your mind at peace. And I think that testing stuff really helps. And to me, it's just a shame that it's not available to everyone, because in some other countries around the world, they just take the testing thing for granted. It's just, that's just how it is. And we haven't gotten there as a country.
No, and I'm glad you bring that up. And I think it's also been evident in Zoom calls with players and coaches that they all feel an incredible level of comfort in that the NBA has done everything possible to ensure their safety and making sure these protocols are followed. And it does, I can only imagine, provide a huge level of reassurance that you're doing everything possible to maintain your safety. Is when you go out for the testing, when you step outside of your door, is that the only time that you're able to step outside of your hotel room?
Yeah, I mean, other than bending over to pick up the meals they leave on my doorstep, that's it. They take it very seriously. I imagine they've got some level of video security around. So yeah, it's a full lockdown, man. They're not playing games, and you can understand why. Like if you take the Rashawn Holmes situation, right. If that Postmates driver happens to be positive, right? Even if he's asymptomatic, so he doesn't even know he's sick. You know, Holmes goes out there to get his food. That guy infects him. He comes back. Everybody thinks he's healthy, right? So he can go to practice with all of his teammates. Now he's exposed them all potentially. If they play a scrimmage next Monday, they potentially have, you know, exposed everyone that they scrimmage against. And it just kind of goes from there. The whole thing could be, you know, go up in a ball of flame. So that's why you have to take basically a zero tolerance policy on any kind of rules violations. And I'll say this, I mean, the fact that the coronavirus crisis is so bad here in Florida right now, you know, the case counts rising and everything else. I mean, what more motivation do you need as a player to follow the rules than to know if you go outside, you're going to be at this huge risk? I actually think kind of ironically, hosting it in Florida, which is, you know, one of the country's hotspots, could actually wind up encouraging players to follow the rules because the risk is so real, if that makes sense.
No, I hope that's the case. I mean, I know that they've already had to reissue a warning to players in the bubble to make sure that they don't invite anybody on campus. I think that's just players being players are going to make that same mistake over and over again. But I hope that eventually, and I think you pointed out too, as they continue to get further and deeper into this process, hopefully they'll start to realize the stakes are getting higher and they can't afford to make those kind of mistakes. But we'll finish this conversation up in our next segment. I'm talking here with Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, and you're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I'm here with Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, and we're talking about life inside the bubble. Ben, from everything I've seen, at least from the players on the Heat side, these are the Zoom calls that I've been mostly on, they seem to be very appreciative of what's going on. I think we saw a lot of concerns early on that the food was not as great. You've posted some information about that on your videos. The food's been acceptable, in your opinion? I mean, I know maybe not as bad as they originally made it out to be.
Yeah, no, I think it's fine. I mean, I'm like John Morant, you know, I'm not a silver spoon guy, so I'm not going to complain about the food. I'll just say that I did order 64 ounces of peanut butter from an online website just to make sure that I had my bases covered. I'm a vegetarian, so that makes it a little bit more difficult. I also don't eat eggs, which, you know, it's, I guess you can call me a picky eater there, but right. You know, it makes it a little bit harder to find something, you know, for them to serve me that I'm going to eat. But, you know, all things considered, it's big portions. You know, it's kind of bland food. I'd say that it's kind of plain. I mean, they're trying to appeal to as many people as possible. The one thing I was missing is just protein, because I was eating a lot of protein, you know, throughout the quarantine period, trying to get myself into a better place fitness wise. Yeah. So kind of going to some of these meals that didn't have as much protein, like my body was really feeling it. Like I was, you know, kind of wearing down from an energy standpoint more quickly, but, you know, I'm pretty confident. They say that meals get better when you leave the quarantine too, because another one of the safety measures they take is it's a lot of pre-packaged food during your quarantine, because they're just trying to cut down on any contact between, say, the food prep people and us. So, you know, it's a lot of, you know, pre-packaged meals, pre-packaged parts within the meals. Like I get yogurt a lot for breakfast and those kinds of things where nobody has to prepare it.
Is that what you're looking forward to the most, aside from the freedom to just be able to walk around and get the hot sunshine and air and stuff like that? Are you most looking forward to being, you know, having an expanded menu to choose from?
You know, I'm not, I don't care that much about food, to be honest. Okay. Like I've never been someone who's like, oh, you know, I need to like go to a fancy restaurant. Like I usually am eating for convenience's sake. A lot of times I'll just eat my meals at a desk as I'm working, right? So right. To me, it's all about the outdoors, you know, getting to go see some of these beautiful fountains, these lakes. There's a lot of really nice, you know, like plants and flowers, you know, that are just like different than what I have at home in California, just like a different tropical vibe. So, you know, I love taking pictures of stuff like that. So right now,
as we can all see, we can all see that on your Instagram feed, by the way, it's a cornucopia of nature photography there. So it's been fantastic.
I know. Well, now, right now it's all taunting me out the window. Right. And I can't actually go see it. So I'm really looking forward to that. But more than anything, I mean, I'm down here to cover the basketball games. Right.
Of course.
Like, they're starting here pretty quick, man. You and I are guys like us. We've been waiting for months. And like, we have scrimmages starting next week, games starting the week after that. I mean, the idea that we're less than 2 weeks away from LeBron versus Kawhi opening night, I mean, it gives me goosebumps. You know what I mean? Like, I'm already just like kind of, you know, feeling like, oh, is this too good to be true? Like, please, like, nothing ruin it because I can't wait. So that's what I'm looking forward to more than anything is the basketball stuff. And, you know, the grounds here are nice. You know, I had never been to Disney World before, so my expectations were very low. I hardly have seen any of the Disney movies, right? So, like, I'm really out of my element from that standpoint, but I don't come to Florida very often. So even like the humidity and that kind of stuff throws me off, but you know, it's a beautiful sunny day right now. And you know, yeah. Hopefully it stays that way for next week once they let me out.
It's August, I recall, always being a very tough month. I don't mean to make this very negative for you, but August in particular is always very tough because there's like a couple week period there where you don't see like the sun very often and it's constantly raining. That's just, I think that's the heaviest in terms of actual rainfall. But, you know, with any luck, you'll probably be inside of an arena watching actual basketball being played and you won't have to worry about it too much. I'm sure most of the spaces are fairly covered there. So even when you step outside of the arena, you'll have a shuttle be able to pick you up and take you back to your hotel and things of that sort. So it should be fine. And again, it's going to be fantastic watching these games played out, but this is a perfect segue then, because obviously my listeners are all Heat fans. They're all very curious. I don't know how closely you've been following some of the Zoom calls from the team, but they seem to be pretty engaged. The overall feeling is that they're locked. They're focused on the ultimate goal of winning a championship. And I know from an outsider's perspective, that probably seems a little unrealistic. What are your takes on Miami's chances in the playoffs once things start to move to normal? Again, they are so much shorthanded, missing a couple of starters, and eventually they'll be at full strength. What's your feeling on Miami in the bubble?
Well, I look at Miami as kind of a third tier team, to be honest. I mean, I have my first tier would be Clippers, Lakers, Bucks. Okay. My second tier would be, you know, Toronto, Boston, you know, maybe if I'm being generous, a team like Philly or Houston, just because they have a certain level of upside with their superstar level players, maybe Denver, if they somehow, you know, completely catch fire. I have Miami though, in that third tier where it would be pretty surprising to me if they made the conference finals, but I could see them winning a series for sure. I mean, I think what you're describing about being locked in is a huge part of this experience. And when you're trying to say like, who are the people who have the best advantage? Yes. I think it's organizations that have really good alignment between their star player and their coach. I think Miami checks that box. You know, we've already heard about Jimmy Butler, you know, dribbling a basketball God knows what hour to get himself, you know, a little bit of an informant's complaint here at the hotel. So that tells you he's all, you know, focused on basketball. And you know Spo's coming ready to go. Like, that's the last thing you have to worry about, you know, around the league. So I think that, you know, the culture that they pride themselves on, they make such a big deal about it, sort of that overachievers mentality, that unity mentality, you know, if you have any, you know, negative ego, you don't have a spot in Miami. I think all those things are really helpful when you're basically at summer camp and you have to spend a ton of time together. I'm sure you guys already saw those photos of their practice gym where they got, you know, all these family photos, you know, kind of decorated almost inspirationally. Right. I thought that was like a really smart, you know, nice touch.
The players lounge. I think that's in the players lounge where they all kind of gravitate. That's where I think Spo and a lot of the players have said that's where they hang out the most when they're not actually, you know, practicing on the court or in their individual rooms. They all go to that individual lounge that each team has been given.
Exactly. And I think that stuff like that helps too. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, it's funny. It varies a lot in the NBA, whether guys actually like each other or not. You know, some teams can be really successful and not spend that much time together. Other teams, it's like they have to spend the time together or they can't be successful. And so I think from that standpoint, you know, everything that we've heard about Miami and just how this group bonded this season, you know, and it showed on the court in terms of how they're playing for each other, how hard they play on a night-to-night basis. I just think that, you know, ultimately, once the teams that have superior talent are kind of up to full speed, I think that they're going to be a little bit lacking. To me, they're just kind of still one star away. But that doesn't mean they can't put on a good run here. And, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they can do. I've always loved Jimmy Butler, the competitor, Jimmy Butler, the personality. We hear all these stories in Minnesota, remember, of him like dogging out Karl Towns and Andrew Wiggins during scrimmages. Like, well, imagine if he's out there in a first round playoff series and, you know, maybe against Philadelphia, you think he might have a few things to say to Ben Simmons, right? I mean, I'll be sitting there 10 feet away, taking notes, hearing what he trying to hear what he has to say, you know?
What do you think of the matchup between Miami and Milwaukee? Obviously, they've had some great success during the regular season. You can take that for what it's worth. But I think the overall move is, you know, at the trade deadline, they acquired Jay Crowder and Iguodala, who may or may not be able to get into playing shape. But the thought process, at least, is that they'll be able to have enough switchable defenders to make things difficult for Giannis as he gets to the rim and maybe keep him out of his comfort zone. And if that's the case, maybe they can just try their luck with everybody else on the team. We already know that Eric Bledsoe isn't there, but he eventually will be back with the team. So who knows whether they'll be at full strength once they eventually face, if they were able to advance and meet Milwaukee in the second round of the playoffs. But what's your feeling on that matchup particularly?
Well, look at you already looking ahead to September, man. I love it. Well, here's the thing. You know I'm an investor in Giannis Inc., right?
Absolutely.
He's one of the people I think is the most important basketball figures maybe of all time in terms of his international influence and just his story arc and everything else. Hardly anything scares Giannis Inc. more than Bam Adebayo. I'll just tell you that right now. I mean, that guy, I'm not saying he's a Giannis stopper. I don't want to put that kind of pressure on anybody. But when you're talking about quickness, length, reaction time, positioning, intelligence, shot blocking ability, physical strength, that's the package you need to have to stop Giannis. And if you can stop Giannis or at least slow him down with one, it makes it so much easier to defend their entire offense. Their offense is predicated on most teams needing two to stop Giannis. And so I think it's a big X factor, in that particular series. I also think, from Milwaukee, I almost feel like they're the biggest loser of the whole shutdown because they had great momentum all season long. They were just rolling. I thought there was a real chance they were going to roll through the playoffs if it was a normal year. And they're also very highly leveraged on the three-point shot. Their entire offense is built around the outside shooting, the driving kick stuff from Giannis, right? They got a million guys who shoot a high volume of threes. And then their defense, they give up a lot of threes because they're trying to take away the basket. So what I worry about is if they don't have home court advantage, if they're down here in a random gym, if they're highly leveraged on the threes and for whatever reason they can't shoot that well, or their opponent is shooting better than average because they don't have to do it on the road, a lot of those ingrained advantages you get as a number one seed start to disappear really, really quickly. And we know this is not like a big three type of team in Milwaukee, right? It's a big one. And then, Middleton is also an all-star level player. But, the rest of the guys are role guys. So to me, I'm nervous on their behalf. I do feel bad for them because, again, I thought they were going to probably go, 12-2 through the East to get to the finals. And I don't see that happening at all now. I think it's going to be a much tougher run for them.
Well, that sounds great, and I appreciate you providing this incredible insight from inside the bubble. Thank you so much for taking the time. That's Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, one of the best out there in NBA media. Make sure to follow him on Twitter. Make sure to follow all of his information and posts on the Washington Post. You won't be disappointed. Make sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.